It's a bad idea. What's up, Wisconsin? I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We will return to our conversation about the White House correspondence dinner in a bit. But right now, I want to welcome my special Monday guest, my friend, current Chief Deputy District Attorney for Milwaukee County and candidate for District Attorney, Kent Lovern. Welcome, Kent. Great to have you.
Thanks, Maggie. Great to see you.
Yeah, it's been a couple months since I've seen you
it
last.
Has. Congratulations on your transition.
Thank you. And congratulations on your candidacy and your big announcement. I certainly was surprised when District Attorney Chisholm indicated that he was retiring after so many decades of service. But you've been working for John as the chief deputy for 26 years.
I have. I've been a prosecutor for 26 years and for the last 17 as his chief deputy and deputy DA. Yep.
It's an incredible record of service. So let me just start with thank you for that. We were just talking as we were getting ready to come on the air about some of the challenges facing the legal system in the state of Wisconsin. And you were pointing out some pretty critical tipping points, if you will, where we find ourselves as a system, not just in Milwaukee County, but statewide. Tell us more about that.
Sure. Statewide, there's a shortage everywhere right now of prosecutors and public defenders. And I will say right now, I think it maybe weighs a little more heavily on the public defender side. And I will say it's important to acknowledge what the state, the governor, and the legislature did last year in advancing salary increases for both public defenders and prosecutors who get the same salary as they should. I think that was very helpful. It was long needed, and I appreciate that they funded the program the way that they did. It certainly prevented some experienced people from leaving our office last year, so I'm grateful for that. Having said that, we still, of course, see attrition, and I know there is a shortage of defense lawyers in particular across the state, and that has huge implications for our ability to move cases through the system as quickly as we'd like to, both for someone charged with a crime and for someone who's a victim of a crime.
Absolutely. People have heard folks that touch the legal system speak about the backlog coming out of COVID, and it's simply the district attorney and state public defender's office and the courts, the judges themselves, do they have the capacity to help these cases move through the system? Are we there yet? Do we need more resources? Is it about body? We need more people? Where are we?
Well, we've made progress to be sure. At the same time, of course, we've seen spikes in violent crime rates. So, of course, we as a DA's office in Milwaukee are putting more serious cases into the system right now because that's what's been presented to us and that is what the response has been. We have enough prosecutors at the moment because we have prosecutors funded through COVID relief dollars. We do not have enough defense attorneys right now. We have vacancies right now in our public defender's office. We have other defense attorneys who have retired, and we have a shortage of defense attorneys. And that in and of itself can help contribute to a slowdown of the process because everyone deserves an attorney. We all recognize that. We all want everyone to have suitable counsel. And, with not having enough of them right now, that has slowed the entire process down.
I've said frequently on this show that when I used to do trial work, I always wanted to litigate or try a case against the most competent attorneys. I actually thought that it was maybe easier, may not be the right word, but that it was clearer that we were able to bring forth the factual and legal questions in a much more concise and clear way that you could actually get to the root of the matter, the core of the dispute. Have you found that to be the case in your experience as a district attorney? Meaning, we want really good lawyers on the criminal defense bar, whether they're on the private side or with the state public defender's office.
And no question about that, Maggie. You know, we're talking about people's civil rights here.
Yes.
For someone who's charged with a crime. And we're talking about the rights that a victim has, in many cases in particular, serious crime, too. So we want these cases handled well. Part of the obligation through every one of these cases is to make sure that the person charged with the crime understands all the evidence that the state has against him or her. And the best person to explain that to him is a competent lawyer. And certainly a person is entitled to represent themselves under the Constitution. But the fact of the matter is we see better results and people get the representation they deserve when a competent attorney is there to explain the entire process to them. And it's also helpful then for the victim of the case, because if we can move the case forward in a faster pace through the system, the victim does not have to continue to be victimized through a prolonged difficult court process.
I think that is something that deserves mention and emphasis, and that is we need quality lawyers both in our district attorney's offices, also as part of the criminal bar, because the accused and victims both deserve to have those cases move with reasonable speed through the system. It doesn't serve anyone to have cases languishing for years, which brings up the issue in my mind of cash bail, which seems to be this like buzzword and everybody loses their mind about it, Kent. Can you explain to folks what bail system we have and what is meant when people talk about cash bail reform?
So we have a cash bail system here in Wisconsin, which means that historically under the law, the primary purpose of somebody posting bail or having a bail set on their case was to ensure their return to court. That was always the primary purpose of bail under the law in Wisconsin. Recently, in the last session, the legislature passed and the governor signed a law that expanded the importance of the type of case that a person is charged with for consideration under bail. So now we, in a greater way, consider the seriousness of the offense being faced by the person and into their character to some extent based on their prior records. Those are things that are now high priorities when considering cash bail. The fact is that Wisconsin is a little different than many states that will impose a cash bail, but only require a person to pay perhaps 10% of that bail. And so in many other states, you have bail bondsmen who exist to front the 10% and cover the rest of the money as insurance. Here in Wisconsin, if your cash bail is $10,000 set by a court, you have to pay $10,000 in order to secure your release. And so now we have this additional these additional factors related to the seriousness of the crime at issue, the prior record of the offender at a higher given higher priority now under the law. And every day in our office and in every courtroom in the state, prosecutors go in and make bail recommendations to a judge or to a court commissioner. And then that judge or court commissioner makes the ultimate decision after hearing the argument of a defense lawyer what the appropriate bail should be in that particular case.
It's interesting. One of the things that I try to help people understand is that all else being equal, the more wealthy an individual is, the more likely they will be, no matter how serious the crime or at any given level of seriousness, to be able to post a cash bail. It's a baked-in inequity of the system. So when people talk about bail reform, they're coming from sort of both ends of the political spectrum. Am I right? So some people want to get rid of cash bail because there is an inequity, a wealth inequity. Others want to get rid of it and or introduce bail bondsmen, right? So there's all kinds of complexity here. What are your understandings, Kent, not to take any side on the question, but sort of the two ends of the political spectrum when it comes to cash bail?
Well, I do think it's important to consider the seriousness of the offense that a person's in front of a court for. I think that's imperative, and I appreciate that the state government raised the level of concern and consideration for that in court. I think that was a good move. I certainly hear the concerns about having money in the bail system at all. The federal system, for example, as you know, Maggie, has a system related to preventative detention is the term. And essentially, the decision is made, does this person charged with a crime stay in custody or is this person released from custody with certain conditions? And there is no money. It's based essentially on the seriousness of the offense and whether they think that the person is a good risk not to leave the jurisdiction. That is something the federal system does and other states do as well. Certainly could be something considered in Wisconsin in the future, perhaps.
And that, to break it down real simply, when you're in the federal system, it doesn't matter how wealthy you are. A judge is going to make a determination about whether or not you will be released before you are tried or not. And you can have a bazillion dollars and it won't make one hill of beans of difference. And I think that that's, you know, as we have these conversations, I think people's emotions can get really high given the Waukesha County parade tragedy, but we just had quite a tragedy that occurred in Milwaukee County, a terrible crime committed by a man released on cash bail by a Waukesha County judge. This just occurred last week. There was a fatal crash. Again, folks killed a 69-year-old man. This is last Tuesday. And he was in Waukesha County Court just the day before. And so the point that I'm trying to make is that these challenging decisions about whether or not to set bail and at what cash amount for judges aren't really liberal or conservative questions. They're questions of how much information do we have? And there is still never certainty when you're setting cash bail amounts. So, so important that we can have an informed discussion about this. Kent, you've been doing this for a long time. And I know that you and John, the current district attorney, have always had basically an election integrity unit and some experts within the district attorney's office that help ensure that our elections are being conducted in conformity with the law. How does that work leading up to Election Day and on Election Day? What is the role of the district attorney's office?
So what we do is we have prosecutors who every year are commissioned as part of their daily assignments in our office with our public integrity unit. They're well versed in campaign laws and election law, and they are always our point people in every election cycle. We have additional prosecutors who work in our community each and every day in the police district stations, and their role is to respond to issues that may come up throughout an election day. And they do that in an effort to be as responsive as we possibly can in the neighborhoods they serve.
We're going to take just a breath there, get a couple of important messages, and then we're going to come back with my guest this half hour, current Chief Deputy District Attorney, candidate for District Attorney in Milwaukee County, Kent Lovern. If you've got a question for Kent or I, comment. Got a few of our texters engaging. We'll take those after these important messages. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. More with Chief Deputy District Attorney Kent Lovern after these important messages. Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Joined this half hour by my friend, now yours, Chief Deputy District Attorney Kent Lovern, running for the district attorney role in Milwaukee County. We were talking just before the break, Kent, about the district attorney's role in election processes. You've been in the office for 26 years. In your 26 years, have you ever seen any kind of election irregularities that would rise to the level of having an impact on the outcome of elections here in Wisconsin?
No, I mean, we've not seen systemic voter fraud, as sometimes people express concern about. We have on occasion, and I would say perhaps as often as almost every year, we have a few handful of people who, you know, may vote two times, may vote unlawfully because they're not eligible to vote. Something like that comes up and they get prosecuted for it. And that happens in almost every election cycle. But I can tell you that nothing on a widespread basis.
And we were also talking about the fact that former U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin, Stephen Biskupic, widely respected attorney, really smart guy, by no means a liberal, did an analysis about election system functioning a while back, issued a report. What was former U.S. Attorney Biskupic's upshot of his report, Kent?
Ultimately, that there is no widespread voter fraud in Wisconsin. And now, it's been a few years since he issued that report, obviously, but it was a very thoughtfully done, well-researched report that he put together. And certainly we were involved in the election process at that period of time, helping to respond to concerns raised by anyone who was voting, or any election monitor, or any poll worker. And so, and I can tell you that our observations are that elections continue to run as smoothly as they did when that report was issued.
Yes. And just so people understand the mechanics of what happens on election day, each campaign, especially for presidential campaigns, has a right to have a poll observer in a poll. They're given a designated area. Other nonpartisan or non-candidate affiliated observers can be there as well. You have a number of district attorneys who basically visit polling sites and are assigned sectors within Milwaukee County. You show up, they talk to the election inspector, which is basically the chief grand poobah of that particular polling location. Are you having any problems? Anything happening? No, they move on to the next polling place. In addition, if there is an issue at a polling place, any of the election workers or the inspector for that particular polling site can phone MPD. There's a dedicated line, or they can phone the DA's office directly, get one of the district attorneys and have a district attorney or a police officer respond directly to the polling site. Am I describing this correctly?
That's accurate.
Yeah. And I think just people, please know, folks are out there en masse on these days responding if there are questions or problems. And these people, again, sworn officers of the courts, there to do their jobs and respond. Again, in Ken's 26 years of experience and my experience working as corporation counsel for Milwaukee County, the biggest hubbub I've ever seen is a polling place running out of ballots, or people wearing campaign garb or sort of electioneering in or too close to the polling place. That's been the extent of anything, you know, even seemingly problematic in our election processes. And I think Wisconsinites everywhere should take a great amount of comfort in that. If you've got questions about how your county's district attorney's office or police prepare for your election cycles in your county, go ahead and give them a call. Somebody will explain it to you, because there are people there that deeply care about this stuff. You can call your election administration officials, ask them questions as well. My experience has been these are good public servants just trying to do their job.
I would just only add, you know, for a number of years, we've often met before any major election with representatives of both major political parties, have a meeting with them in our office, hear any concerns they may have leading into the election, make sure everybody's got contact information for everyone in our office. And we've engaged in that practice of inviting both political parties in for these meetings for many years now.
And that's important, because if one of the parties or candidates sees a problem, they actually can basically put it up the chain of command and get somebody from the DA's office on the phone. Hey, we think that there's a problem here. Again, everybody is oriented to ensure that the election happens transparently and smoothly. And there are a ton of access points for both the political parties and the campaigns to reach out if they think there is a problem. But there really aren't. Again, the biggest things I've ever seen is, oh gosh, we've run out of ballots, which gets resolved very quickly. And again, folks not knowing that they can't effectively campaign within the polling places. Kent, you've been in the office for a long time. Why do you want to be district attorney?
Well, my wife and I have lived here for almost 30 years, raised our family here. I have been a prosecutor for most of those years. And I love serving the community, obviously. I appreciate the work we're able to do in helping to keep the community safe. You know, we've engaged in a number of strategies over the years with members in the community, law enforcement, and also neighborhood groups, social service agencies, the nonprofit field, to try to develop a lot of strategies that actually have improved the health and safety of our community overall. And I know we have a lot of work to do right now. This is a tough time we're living in. We've seen a high spike in violent crime in the last 2 or 3 years that concerns all of us. The reckless driving we've seen throughout our county disturbs everyone. I can tell you it's as disturbing to everybody in any neighborhood in the city of Milwaukee as it is to anyone living in any suburb in the county of Milwaukee. Everyone shares that same concern about their safety when it comes to reckless driving. And certainly we're concerned about the level of gunfire going on in parts of our city as well. So, you know, I want to do something about it. It's a tough job. I want a tough job. And I'm used to, and I've had my eyes wide open for a long time about the challenges we face in this community, but also the opportunity for solutions here. And we have a lot of advantages in Milwaukee County. We have a lot of resources. We've got a lot of people very closely aligned in a number of our sectors, including the business sector. And I think, and we have a lot of assets in this community that many, many other cities our size are or larger wish they had.
Yeah.
And we need to just continue to put those assets to work more closely, better align our public safety and business development strategies. And I think we can make a substantial improvement in what we're seeing right now.
I've often heard from friends and folks that I meet through the radio gig, oh my gosh, can I come into Milwaukee County? I'm worried. Am I going to be safe? What's your answer to that, Kent?
The answer is generally yes. I mean, there's no question about the fact that there are violent crimes that occur here. But as someone I can tell you who is all over the city all the time, I think it's generally a safe place, to be sure. Now, I will tell you, though, we can't take lightly the concerns that people in the city have. And people certainly in neighborhoods in the city of Milwaukee are specifically hard hit by violent crime.
Yes.
They are, by gunfire and by reckless driving in particular. And they're asking for a strong response to that. And our system needs to provide a strong response to violent crime and to the crime that's endangering people and scaring people. At the same time, we also know that there are ways to treat people who have mental illness, who have addiction in ways and who aren't intending to hurt anybody, but perhaps themselves through their lifestyle. And those individuals need to be treated through our healthcare system where we best can, or through a treatment module or something that maybe gets to the root cause of why they're not succeeding in life right now. So we can do both of those very successfully. I'm looking forward to continuing to tackle that.
Where can people find out more about you and your campaign, Kent?
KentLovern.com is my campaign website.
That is KentLovern, KentLovern.com. Thanks so much for being here, Kent.
Thanks for having me, Maggie.
It's great to see you again.
Good to see you, too.
Again, my thanks to candidate for Milwaukee County District Attorney, Kent Lovern. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Your farm update is next. Then we're going to listen to some more fun sound for the White House correspondents. Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Happy Monday, everybody. Getting into the swing of things here. I really enjoyed today revisiting a whole bunch of the sound and coverage from the White House Correspondents' Dinner. I think some really punchy lines from Colin Jost, who hosted it. One of my favorite ones, and I couldn't find sound for this, but he made a little crack. Doug Emhoff is Kamala Harris's husband. And Colin Jost is married to Scarlett Johansson, who is way more famous than he is. So he landed this punchline. Doug, as you can tell from all the comments about my wife, I'm also used to being the second gentleman, which I thought was very cute. But I thought both President Biden and Colin Jost finished their comments on appropriate, timely, and very poignant, serious notes. And so I wanted to start with President Biden's. This is going to be cut six. And just, yeah, this is the moment that we're in. And I thought the president spoke quite eloquently to it. Let's take a listen.
To a free press, to an informed citizenry, to an America where freedom and democracy endure, God bless America.
Yeah, a free press. That's the point here. All kidding aside, the White House Correspondents' Dinner is a celebration of those that cover politics. And make no mistake, it is the fourth estate. Journalism, I do opinion stuff. I'm not reporting. I'm not investigating. I mean, I'll read Supreme Court oral argument transcripts like nobody's business, but I'm not writing. I don't do journalism. But I have such reverence for those that do. And that's what the White House Correspondents' Dinner is all about. Whether you're coming from the right or the left, we need those journalists of integrity, journalists that triple source, journalists that have a strong sense of ethics to help all of us as citizens be the best voters, the most educated participants in our democracy that we can be. And I appreciated the president's comments about that for sure. Let's take a quick caller if you want to get in on the discussion. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Jack from Merrimack, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. You were talking with the
district attorney candidate. Yep.
Right, exactly. And you were talking in specific about voter fraud, voter problems, the allegations that the elections in Wisconsin aren't valid or legal or safe. And this is just more, this kind of thing, allegations, this is more propaganda to try and dissuade people from voting. What I wanted to ask here or say is this. We need a law that guarantees all Americans the right to vote. Theoretically, they have that right based on our Constitution. But we need something like the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. We need a simple law that says, and I don't know how we can start getting to this point. It's already been passed once in the House, and the Senate just basically didn't take it up. We need a law that says clearly, unequivocally, that every adult American has the right to vote, and any other law or regulation or activity that interferes with that right is null, void, or illegal.
I think, yes, Jack, and the trick here is the and part. Because it is impossible to regulate every element of elections federally. We can't. Moreover, the Constitution reserves the administration of election processes to states. So the question becomes, well, what inhibits rather than enhances a citizen's franchise? And by franchise, I mean your voting rights. And that's where I think we need some return to facts and reality. I think a lot of the rhetoric from people over the last 6 years, 7 years, is just totally irresponsible. It's why I asked Kent about, hey, what's the DA's role in election processes? Because helping us all understand how these things happen, the actual process, increasing transparency. I spent nearly 14 business days in a row in the Wisconsin Convention Center downtown during the recount. There's no fraud. Every conceivable argument was made by the Trump campaign. They objected to every ballot. Joe Biden won the election. At the end of the recount in Milwaukee County, Joe Biden had gained votes. It's just... So I think part of the answer is, yes, the Joe Lewis Voting Rights Act, but it's also helping people become better consumers of political rhetoric, right, of these talking points. We didn't have a voter fraud problem before voter ID was put in place. We didn't. And as my colleague Todd Alba will tell you, Republicans out loud, you have to actually dig for it, but out loud have been saying that all of these voter laws that they have enacted, and there was 35 of them under Scott when Scott Walker took over and our state legislature got gerrymandered into oblivion. Republicans have said out loud, this is to keep black and brown folks from voting. The lower the voter turnout of black and brown people, the better it is for us. The quiet part has now been said out loud. And that's the point, right? So understanding and trying to give people greater transparency as to how our elections actually work is the point. And for people that are black and brown folks, your voting is a very act of rebellion against those that want to silence your voice. Your vote is your voice. not all of us. I'm very lucky to get on the radio every day and tell people what I think about things. But for many years, my voice was only my vote. I've never missed an election cycle. I voted in every election cycle that I have been able to since I turned 18. Really proud of that voting record. But that's where the solution lies, in greater information and a federal law that tries to protect people's franchise. I mean, I think we should amend the Constitution to have the election on a Saturday. Heaven forbid. To mandate early voting, right? To mandate in the state of Wisconsin that every registered voter gets a mail-in ballot sent to them automatically, like they do in nearly 12, 13, 14, 15 other states. That's good for everybody. But that's not where we're at. All right, let's take a listen. This is Colin Jost's closing comments. I'm going to return to our discussion about the White House Correspondents' Dinner. This is Colin Jost's closing comments at the dinner. Let's take a listen. This is Cut 15.
But the reason that I bring up my grandfather, and I don't know if you know, realize, Mr. President, but Staten Island firefighters are not normally your demographic. Staten Island voted about 70% for Trump in the last election, and the other 30% was for Giuliani. But Staten Island also sided with the British during the Revolutionary War. So we're not always on the right side of history. You remember. But my grandfather, a Staten Island firefighter, voted for you, Mr. President. He voted for you in the last election that he ever voted in. I mean, I'm sure someone else will vote twice in this election using his name, but that's just how the Democratic machine works. He voted for you, and the reason that he voted for you is because you're a decent man. My grandpa voted for decency, and decency is why we're all here tonight. Decency is how we're able to be here tonight. Decency is how we're able to make jokes about each other and one of us doesn't go to prison after. We go to the Newsmax after party. And when you look at the levels of freedom throughout history and even around the world today, this is the exception. This freedom is incredibly rare, and the journalists in this room help protect that freedom, and we cannot ever take that for granted. So, Mr. President, I thank you for your decency on behalf of my grandfather, and I thank all of you, almost all of you, for your decency as well.
I mean, that's the point, isn't it? We're going to have policy arguments ad infinitum for the rest of time, right? And they are incredibly important. But at base, I want my president to be a decent person and a person that stands up for decency. And again, over the course of May, Anya and I, and I'm going to have some really special guests coming in, we're going to talk about some of the most complicated things that are happening in our world, what's happening in Gaza. We're going to sit in those moments and in those discussions and talk about them together. But I firmly believe that Joe Biden always is trying to do the right thing. Can you say that of the former MAGA president, that his intention is to do well by everyone, that his intention is to do the right thing, that he is a decent man? And you may be a fan. That's fine. be a fan of whoever you want to be a fan with. But can we agree? I think as Wisconsinites, we value decency. We want our leaders to be decent people. And in sharp contrast, we've got a man who thinks it's a good thing that stars get to commit sexual assault. And we know that because he said it. And therein lies all of the rub. When we come back, Anya and I have found some very particular sound about a number of Republican leaders who have said that they are willing to sacrifice their value of decency at the altar of Donald Trump. We're going to listen to them say that Trump is the former MAGA president is unacceptable, and then we're going to listen to them endorse him because that is what's happening. So stay tuned for that sound because I can't quite get my head around it. It's pretty shocking. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. You want to get in on the last segment of the day, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Back in just a moment. Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Yeah. We need a return to decency, to respecting one another, to be able to say, I really disagree, but I'm not going to call you names. I'm not going to say ridiculous things. A return to decency. And unfortunately, it seems to me that many folks on the right, traditional Republicans, refuse to call out what is patently and obviously indecent. And not only do they refuse to call it out, why the heck Liz Cheney is the only one calling for all the January 6th evidence to be made public beyond me? Democrats, hello, where are you? Attorneys General, I'm talking to you, Josh Call. But that so many conservatives who have decried Donald Trump said that he is responsible for terrible things, that he is a menace, a threat to our very republic, to our freedoms that we enjoy, have now or are willing now to simply set aside the indecency, to set aside the bringing low of our values. I don't understand it. Ron DeSantis just endorsed him. I mean, he's talked trash about Trump forever because he ran against him. Let's take a quick listen to what DeSantis has had to say about Trump in the past. This is Cut 17.
Almost like with Donald Trump, if you don't kiss the ring, you could be the best governor ever and he'll trash you. You could be a terrible, corrupt politician, but if you kiss his ring, then all of a sudden he'll praise you. Almost like.
And now he's endorsed him. I mean, I don't understand. The next sound we're going to hear is, are these people, Trump's former attorney general, who has said in interview after interview, time again and time again that Donald Trump is responsible for January 6th, that he's a menace, that he's unstable. Oh, yeah. Bill Barr, in a CNN interview this past weekend with Caitlin Collins, says, I'll be voting for Mr. Trump over Biden. It's wild, right? If we'll get the full interview clip, this is just sort of a montage. It's Bill Barr, Mitch McConnell, and Chris Sununu. Very three notable Republicans. All on this next cut saying Donald Trump is a menace, and then, yes, I'm going to vote for Donald Trump, and I'm endorsing him. We will have for you tomorrow the full CNN clip, because Bill Barr won't say Trump's name. He keeps fighting, saying, I will vote for the Republican now. I'm going to support the Republican ticket. And Caitlin Collin, the journalist, finally says, why won't you say his name? You're saying that you're going to vote for Donald Trump? Yes. Yes, I will. Let's take it. This is the problem. It's not just Trump's indecency. It is the indecency of other Republicans, their willingness to throw our values to the side, their principles, and join him in the indecency. Let's take a listen. This is Cut 18.
If you're tired and feeling lonely.
Every day, prominent Republicans across the country tell us that Trump was responsible for the attack on the Capitol.
I do think he was responsible. I think the whole idea was to intimidate Congress.
President Trump is responsible for provoking the events of the day.
You said it is clear that President Trump's rhetoric and actions contributed to the insurrection. Do you stand by that statement?
100%.
But sadly, these same Republicans say they will vote for him again.
You're voting for someone who you believe tried to subvert the peaceful transfer of power.
The answer to the question is yes.
But you support him for president, even though you believe he contributed to an insurrection?
Yeah, me and 51% of America.
I said that I would support President Trump if he were the nominee, and he obviously is going to be the nominee of our party.
These Republicans are suffering from partisan derangement syndrome.
You don't see this as the definition of putting party over country?
No.
At this point in the ad, I would tell you to call this number so you can help these deranged partisan Republicans. But sadly, they're too far gone.
Bill Barr can't answer. He answers the question after. This isn't the epitome of putting party over country? Oh, no. That's the problem. I can't wait until we can just have an argument about tax policy, right? And funding Social Security and foreign policy. This is what I want to argue about again. I don't want to have to argue about whether or not our president should fundamentally be a decent person. He should. I don't want to argue about whether or not our president attempted to stop the peaceful transition of power and whether or not a person like that should be president again. I believe in freedom and basic American values, which includes decency. I believe in freedom and the peaceful transfer of power. These are the things that I believe conservatives believe and value too. So let's stand up and say that together, very clearly, repeatedly, until Donald Trump goes away. Because he is not helping us do better for one another. He is not helping forward policy ideas that help serve the middle class. He's going to be here in Waukesha County at the Expo Center on Wednesday. Civic Media is going to have some special coverage. You're going to want to tune in. Don't miss my show that day. But fundamentally, here's what I want to know this. Fundamentally, are we going to hear one clear policy platform, one clear idea from Donald Trump on Wednesday that will serve Wisconsinites? One thing. Because I don't think we will. I think we'll hear a litany of grievance and more indecency. I'm sick of it. Are you? I'm Maggie Dawn. Thanks so much for listening. to the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay tuned. The Devil's Advocates Radio is up next. I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But always remember, it is better when we stand together.
I'm telling these tears, going fall away, fall away. Oh, may the last one burn into flame.